This is John Leo. I'm here with Dr. Anthony Cronin of Yale Law School. He's a former dean of the school, currently Sterling Professor of Law there, and author of an excellent book, Education's End, Why Our Colleges and Universities Have Given Up on the Meaning of Life. Now, I have to tell you, Dr. Cronin, this book jumped out of a pile of books on education, and we were just enthralled by it. I think we were probably the first to excerpt it, if not review it, and a lot of people had that same reaction. Why do you think this book made such a splash when it came out?
I think the liberal arts and liberal education have many quiet friends in various quarters and corners. Friends of the old classical ideals of liberal education, which I defend in the book, and which one these days doesn't hear often defended on our campuses or off our campuses for that matter. And I really felt when I wrote this book that I was simply describing in what felt to me like a pretty straightforward and even self-evident way some basic truths about undergraduate education.
Let me ask you this. Many people have written about political correctness, very few as well as you did, but you picture the university and its students as being whipsawed between political correctness and the research ideal.
That's right.
Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, let me say something about each. The research ideal is, I think, the deeper and more long-lived and consequential phenomenon, and the one that has had really the most damaging effect on the humanities themselves. The research ideal came in with the modern university system, which was born in this country in the second half of the 19th century. And to put it in a nutshell, what the research ideal says is that success, advancement, stature, promotion, all of the rest in the modern academy and higher education today depends on your scholarly output. And that presses things irresistibly in the direction of specialization and makes the great sweeping questions of the humanities, the old-fashioned questions, look dilettantish, not the kinds of questions that a serious scholar would take up in a serious way. Political correctness, which is a movement that really had its beginnings in the humanities in the 1960s and 70s and 80s and its strongest supporters there, was, I think, in part a reaction on behalf of teachers of the humanities to the growing sense of emptiness and directionlessness within their disciplines. And they looked around for a substitute program that they could attach themselves to. And the idea of becoming vanguards for the advancement of one or another perfectly reasonable political ideal within the academy acquired a pretty wide following and had, I think, a devastating effect on the humanities because it made these old, sprawling human questions, the perennial ones, which were under a cloud already, even harder to approach and
but
more
politics
embarrassed.
Politics played a role too, didn't it? Vietnam in particular, that the disdain that so many professors and students have for the West, if not hatred for our values, certainly got a big boost by the Vietnam War.
I would describe the politics of the war, of the anti-war movement, as an accelerant that certainly aggravated things and pushed them along further and more rapidly in this direction. But there were many different contributing factors, all of which pushed in the same direction, as you've identified it, I think, correctly, that things associated with the West, the values of the West, the traditions of the West, Western civilization, came under a cloud of disrepute, and it became really almost embarrassing for a teacher of the humanities to say, this is what I'm interested in, this is what I believe in, there are other things worth studying for sure. Who would deny that? But among the world's great treasures, there is this, the civilization we've inherited.
And you say in the book that the humanities are not just in trouble, they're in danger of becoming a laughingstock.
Well, I fear so, because the movement that we call political correctness didn't restore or rescue the prestige of the humanities. It made them look even sillier from the standpoint of those other disciplines, the social and natural sciences, that were really moving forward in a intellectually progressive and measurable way.
But isn't it also true, I hate to give any quarter to PC, but the argument that the humanities can't prove anything. There was an ethic that somehow the social sciences should become like the hard science and quantify everything. That was bound to be folly anyway.
Sure. Well, yes, that it is true that the humanities can prove very, very little, if anything at all. But at the end of the day, the values by which we live and steer our little boats, you and I, aren't provable. They may be well-founded, they may hold our deepest allegiance and strongest convictions, but they fall far short of proof.
Do you feel that because of the economic crisis, that even less attention will be paid to values and traditions on campus?
That's such an interesting question. I was musing about that on the way down this afternoon on the train from New Haven. I was chatting with a friend about the financial crisis, and this question came up. I would like to think not. This is a crisis not just of the failure of regulatory oversight, of institutional design, of bad models for the assessment of risk. It's surely all of that. But it is also deep down, I think, a failure of character and wisdom and temperament. And many of the extremely well-credentialed young men and women who have led us into this catastrophe through greed and cowardice, frankly, a lack of confidence in their own sound judgment, might perhaps have had a little more of the character traits they needed if they had been liberally educated in an old-fashioned way.
Now, final question. Take as much time as you need. What do we do about all this?
I think that as grim as the prognosis I offer in my book may be, there are points of light and grounds for hope. I've spoken about in my book around the country, college campuses, university campuses, and everywhere I've gone, from small liberal arts colleges in the Northeast to some large state institutions in the West and Southwest, I have found faculty and students in significant number who have an appetite for the kind of educational program that I urge in my book. So there is a constituency for this kind of thing. And if our colleges and universities are willing and able to provide those who have an appetite for it with the resources they need to make even a modest beginning, it will happen. I think the culture of political correctness has left us all of us in the humanities, washed up on a beach and not terribly happy or satisfied with our work. People are looking for something more, better, something more lasting, something that offers deeper satisfactions. And in a return to a classical conception of liberal education, which has the values of critical, independent-mindedness and self-reflection and honor at its core, I think that a lot will be rediscovered.
It's a very hopeful and optimistic note to end on. I've been talking to Dr. Anthony Cronman, former dean of the Yale Law School, currently a professor there, and author of Education's End: Why Our Colleges and Universities Have Given Up on the Meaning of Life. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.